outline. I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and actually start by posing a question to two speakers myself. I was rather struck by the slide in Mel's presentation about halogen lamps. It showed the what the manufacturers thought the standards were for their, people think what their standards were for their lamps. And I was wondering to what extent, either of you have a feel for the extent to which the lamps not meeting the advertised standards is a result of manufacturers knowingly exaggerating or them not having the internal procedures to be to actually really know how their lamps are actually performing objectively.
In discussions with the Australian representatives of suppliers, they weren't aware. I mean, I'm sure that when they signed up to the MEPS levels, they did that in good faith. They were as kind of as shocked as anybody else was to find that we had a problem, which is, like I say, this problem's only emerged relatively recently, and we were focusing on everything else that we thought was hard, and this has come out of the blue for us and, I think, for the suppliers. And that's why there's been a lot of discussion about bringing what we're requiring into line with the EU, because, you know, clearly we're only a tiny market. But even that wasn't straightforward because of this interpretation of the standards and where the tolerances lay. So it's very complicated, but I do think the Australian suppliers did sign up to the MEPS in good faith in the first instance.
Interesting. Anything on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it really is highlights what Mal said earlier, which is that, you know, standards should be straightforward, but most of the time they're not. If you look at the forerunner, which is the Energy Star program, even Energy Star allows plus or minus 3% in just reporting test results when they first accepted. And now even now they're sort of, I guess Rich can speak more to this, but EPA has revised testing guidelines and acceptance of data already. So, you know, there's still, I'm sure Rich would have some other information to share on the revision.
All right, throw it open. Anyone got any questions?
Comment?
Do we have a roving mic? Right. Right, it's not at the front. Be helpful for President if when you sort of pose your question, say who you are and where you're from.
I'm Richard Carney, U.S. Department of Energy, late of Energy Star. Right now, as far as the testing that's being done under the auspices of EPA is still the testing that we authorized in our Energy Star Spec 4.0, which is still basically running qualification tests for Energy Star. So the testing really hasn't changed, and monitoring is ongoing right now. It's a little bit slightly different than Pearl, but the fact that the manufacturers are paying for the tests versus the utilities and DOE, but the testing, the monitoring of the results is basically the same. Does that help you answer your question?
Sure. No, I guess but there are some changes in sort of how the results are being accepted. Is that not being done? No.
Not
okay.
Yet. No.
Okay.
Any changes in that?
What?
Now that I have the mic, can I have ask a question?
Yeah. Yes.
This is quickly for Mel. It's a quick question. As the phase out of incandescence took place in Australia, did you find consumers hoarding incandescence?
There certainly was some of that. We have no evidence that it was a big problem, but yes, we do know of some anecdotal cases.
We envision, as the standards take place in 2012, raising the efficacy levels of incandescent lamps and basically phasing them out, we're going to see a rush. So
we didn't see a great spike in import data, so it wasn't discernible. In fact, when the announcement was made, you can actually, if you have a look at the slide on the stick, but there was a peak in sales of CFLs as well. So it raised awareness or reminded people about them. So they went out and bought those too.
Right, got a question at the back.
I actually don't want to ask a question. I actually maybe can help Rich with the answer to his. Obviously, Mel's answered for Australia. This morning, you might have seen Hans Paul talk about the 4E program, and we've had a bit of an exchange about the mapping and benchmarking element.
Do you want to introduce yourself for everyone?
Sorry,
here?
I'm Stuart Jeffcott. Who do I work for? Most of you, I guess, at some point. Yes. the work we're doing is about exactly that, the impact of phase-out programs around the world. One of the things is enlightening. The results aren't public yet. They're literally being processed, and you'll know because I was talking to you, Rich. The indications from Europe are there was a surge in incandescent sales of about 35% in most countries, but it was a one-year surge. And they're now falling off quite exponentially, even though they're not all removed from the market yet.
And I can add another light-hearted comment to that, and that was somebody pointed out to me in the coffee break just a few minutes ago that there's a secret hoard of incandescents in this room, because if you just look up...
Yes.
Right, moving on, is got any other questions? Yeah, in the middle there.
Hi, I'm Noah Horowitz with NRDC, the Environmental Advocacy Group in the U.S. The belt or the light just went off for me of all our focus has been residential, primarily screw-based sockets and a little bit things like this. Is there any concern as we're taking a broader look at compliance, linear fluorescent lamps that are in every office building? Is there historical data, or should we also be looking at those? It's a more mature technology, but...
In Australia, we've had regulations on those for some time, but we've been doing some check testing, and we've got a huge non-registration issue. So in order to sell a product legally in Australia, if it's got a MEPS applicable, then it should be registered. And we've just gone to do another round of check testing, and the stuff... We looked at the database and went to try our registration database and went to try and buy the things that are registered to test them, and we couldn't find them. But what we could find in the stores was a bunch of other stuff that's not there at all. So we clearly have an issue.
You know, the Caliper, when they started testing LED linear replacement, they actually went out and benchmarked a number of linear T8s and T5s, just so they have real data to compare the LED replacement products against. But, you know, granted, their sample is small, so I don't know if there's more testing than that, but at least I'm aware that Caliper has that data.
But do we have any more comments on this particular issue before we move on to another one?
Yes.
Yep.
It's Chris Baker. I just wondered, what's stopping harmonization? Does it need a high-level political decision from one of these groups like IPEC? You know, is it something you put on their agenda and it gets done? This has been going on for years, lack of harmonization. Why isn't it happening?
The reason we started Lights Asia was because we found, if you went round a room of the sort of policymakers, the people who were using standards for regulation, and asked them why they weren't using an IEC standard wholesale, you'd get things like humidity,
dust,
power surges. And they're things that the European-oriented IEC groups just don't think about. So if you look at the CFL standard in particular, there's a cold start in there. Fine for Europe, but there's no, like I say, there's no humidity. There's no, none of these things that are important, particularly in Asia. And that's why we conceived Lights Asia, to try and get the standards communities actually getting involved, actively involved in that IEC process, so that we can try and develop standards that are fit for those markets, rather than them just being reactive when the standard's published and saying, oh, I don't like that bit, and I don't like that bit. And everybody doesn't like different bits. And so the concept of harmonization is theoretical. It's not happening. So we're trying to get people working on the detail.
Okay. So would you argue that harmonisation should be starting at a sort of regional level and building upwards? Or?
Well, we're told that before an IEC meeting, you get the European groupings sit together and decide what they want out of that meeting, and you get the North American groupings sitting together and deciding what they want, but that's not been happening in Asia. I know...
If you raise it to a higher level and just get some high-level resolution to sort it out, would it go faster? Because you can talk amongst... we all know what standards committees are like. You know, they will talk forever about these things, and there are always difficulties. But what about a deadline for at least some countries agreeing something within, say, 3 years?
What do you need with high-level resolutions? High-level resources.
Yeah. Right. Because otherwise, you know, you put everybody together in the room, it's like asking if they like apple pie. Of course, I find very few people who don't like apple pie. But then when you ask them, well, what kind of apple pie do you like? Then there's, apple pie crumble, there's apple pie with raspberries, whatever. So that there's definitely different concepts, a different, policy understanding of what harmonization should be. And we're working with extreme cases in Asia.
So with sort of high level buy-in, are we talking about high level political buy-in or sort of chief executive level of companies or both?
Sure.
I think if IPEC, for example, had a focus on the standards processes, that would be helpful because it would give countries a mandate to go and work in that area. Right. But there does have to be an understanding that a very general statement isn't good enough. It is about the detail.
Mm-hmm. And then when you start looking at the challenge of harmonization, it's everything else. It's capacity building. Again, it's why we started Lights Asia, because people don't... They know that they should harmonize, but they're not quite sure what it is. Especially the comments that we're getting now from regulators and standards agencies in Asia is they don't understand LEDs. And so if you ask them, you're asking them to harmonize something that they have no familiarity with and something that they don't understand, it's not an easy process either, right? So definitely it will be a challenge going forward for Lights Asia.
Right, another question? Yep.
Chris Evans, Consumer Research Associates and UK Market Transformation Programme. Just a small point about use of the word standards. I'm just getting a little confused here about whether we're talking about test methodology standards or whether we're talking about performance standards. Now, I suspect we're talking about both, but it's just we're using the word standards both ways, and I just suspect that one or two of us are getting a bit confused. So I'd ask the speakers really to just clarify when we're talking about harmonisation. Are we talking about harmonising the test methodology, or are we talking about harmonising the MEPS, the performance standard?
The important thing is in the first instance, harmonising the test methodology, and that's where we've got the problem with the IEC standards and the deviations that people are starting to introduce. As you probably know, we have a problem with finding a home for harmonising the MEPS component of a standard, because there are lots of people who don't think there should be any harmonisation there. The IEC have one standard that I know of, the electric motors standard, has a set of tiers of performance in it, but they are saying they don't want to do that for other products. So we have a bit of difficulty with the performance level, but I'm primarily talking about the test method.
Question? Yeah.
So we have a problem. The lights apparently are not. So what are the answers? Certainly we face those issues in Canada. Our response is to float a proposal that general service lighting, they're subject to regulations, be third-party verified. Is that an active... consideration in other jurisdictions that require lighting performance standards? Is that a reasonable approach? Or is the fact that the product is a $2 product and cost of verification is totally totally unrealistic for something with such a little value added. All valid questions, but I'd be interested in the effect of the room, whether or not that's a reasonable approach. And the panel.
Yeah, start with the panel.
I'm a believer in not having a regulation if you don't have a compliance program. I think the costs that you impose on industry are unfair if you're not going to actually do anything about it. So I think you have to do compliance. But you do need it to be cost effective, and this is where we ran into problems with testing directional mm-hmm. light sources. So the lighting manufacturers wanted to use very specialist pieces of equipment that they all have because they're lighting manufacturers, yet the classic test labs around the world don't have those bits of equipment. So what we were trying to do was develop a fit-for-purpose compliance test that we could show a correlation with the more expensive way of doing things. And we've managed to achieve mm-hmm. that, but it's taken quite a lot of time, effort, and money.
That was a subset of all the testing you could do under a quality program, though, right?
Yeah.
So I think this Mike had a nice good point on his slide with the difference between harmonization and comprehensive testing programs.
Right.
And I think what you find is that when you try to harmonize standards, they end up becoming quite simple, which is great because they're repeatable and they can be done.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to ask yourself, do they cover all the aspects of the product testing? Mm-hmm. And with lighting, we've already said every meeting I've been in the last
right.
4 years has said that CFLs is quality. And I think we're trying to head that off on LED
sure.
going forward. So I think now the most important thing to focus on would be test methods for LED.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants to set policy. No, I'm not a policy guy, so I'm trying to learn and understand policy.
Yeah.
But from a testing point of view, it has to come first.
Right.
You'll never get there. So I think we need to come up with a way to harmonize the test methods. And that was a good point to bring up about the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there is a, under 4E, as Hans Poole mentioned this morning, there is a new annex on solid-state lighting. And one of the working groups will be on the test method. They're meeting for the first time in Shanghai next week. So we're hoping, a lot of us are getting behind that initiative, and we're hoping that we're really going to get something workable out of this by collaborating. This time, very, very early in the piece, rather than... What we'd like to do is head off the problems we had with CFLs.
Right. Because, you know, if you go into a room and say, well, I tell people, oh, well, I work on CFLs and harmonization. And I get a double take. CFLs, isn't that done? Harmonization, haven't we harmonized? And what, you know, why are you still here? and you know, the problem hasn't gone away.
At the back,
yeah. Sorry, yes, I got the mic back again because I'm going to come to John just a little. If I understood your question, John, you were asking, is it viable to have a registration system where a manufacturer is required to register before they sell the product for something like right? Yeah. Well, Mel sort of alluded to what they do in Australia. They do require that. You know, you do need to register your tube, although it sounds like they're not registering their tubes. And
you're
you do need
to
supply your CFLs. You do need to register them. You do need to supply a test report. At the moment, I don't think you have to supply a third-party test report. We have to supply a test report to register to sell into the country. Is it viable? I think absolutely, and I wouldn't get caught up on this, it's a $2 product. Well, it is a $2 product, but it's a $2 product in the billions. Okay, for a particular country, it's not the billions, but it's 100 millions. So in terms of actual compliance cost for a manufacturer, it probably evens out the same as a washing machine, because it's 200 times more retail sales for the same value. I would go with what a number of people have been saying upstairs. I was upstairs earlier, that without that, it makes verification really, really difficult. In your enforcement, you don't know how to target. You don't necessarily know what's been declared. All you know is your regulations. And even tracking back to who put it in the market. And so I would encourage, not just is it viable, I would say it actually simplifies the rest of the process and increases the likelihood of you protecting it, protecting the market, and letting the consumer and the manufacturer be better off, at least the better manufacturer, shall we say.
Gentleman in the middle has a question.
I wanted to respond to John.
Yes.
Well done, John.
So this question about should you do the testing for only a $2 product, it's both volume and also, you know, lighting's what, 10 to 20% of overall energy use, and the products are providing on paper 75% savings. So that whole package tells me go for it on this product. I've been involved in lighting testing as well as other products, and lighting is potentially the hardest product to do verification testing out of anything everybody's dealing with. Why? It's not just how much power does the bulb use, although the halogen bulbs you tested, mm-hmm. even saw some differences between rated and performance. But here we're talking about a handful of attributes, not just one. When you talk about a clothes washer or a motor, it's how much power does it use, or one metric, maybe two.
Right.
Here we're talking a bunch of metrics to start, and then how does it perform over time? And it takes a long time to get that data for these products that have long lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be from when you decide you're going to do testing to you buy it, acquire, get the data, and analyze it, 9 months could have transpired, and you did a great job, and then the product's not on the market. So this is a complicated, not still worth going after, but recognize there are all these things. And I think you're dead on. If a consumer buys an efficient product and you use 14 watts versus 16 compared to the 60, they don't care. They got huge energy savings, maybe they lost a little bit. But if it's 30% dimmer than they were told it was going to be, then they're upset. So I think that's something to really keep focusing on and perhaps require disclosure on the package. And then your verification is not only checking the energy use, but how bright is the product.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry for the speech.
In Europe and in Australia now, that disclosure is becoming a legal requirement.
Chris, you had a comment?
Actually, it was picking up on the test methodology, which has come up a couple of times now, and Mel talking about how we don't want to make the same mistakes with LEDs as we did with CFLs. And it's really to make the point that there is a new IEC test methodology in preparation for CFLs, which a number of people in this room put money into some time back. And it's been, what, two, three, whatever years, 4 years?
Five.
in gestation.
Yes.
But I'm told that it's close to being finally voted through. Is that right?
So we all understand, but we have thought that for some time.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the point behind that methodology, I mean, Mel, you can tell me
right.
better than
It might happen in October, but we don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's that will cover off a whole range of performance attributes as well as just the efficiency of the lighting itself.
In terms of test methodology, yes,
but
it doesn't. It doesn't have the tiers of performance.
Yeah.
In it. They've
right.
been removed, and this is where we say that it was acceptable to have that in a standard for one product, but it hasn't been acceptable so far with CFLs. So we need to find a home for those performance levels.
Can I just ask you to clarify what you mean by a home? I happen to know.
Okay.
You mean a central organisation like the IEC, like the CIE for lighting, or like miscellaneous new house for performance standards?
Yeah, well, so I think they should, I believe personally that they that the IEC is the place for something
mm-hmm.
like that, as it is for motors, and it does seem to work for motors. But I'm not sure what the reticence is about. But apparently there are, you know, if you don't have a standard, you can have a technical specification under IEC, and it's possible that that's where they would sit rather than in a an IEC standard. But it's a reputable body that everybody recognises, a place that people would feel comfortable going, governments would feel comfortable going and saying, well, they're bound, you know, they're good guys, that they've probably got this right.
And they're already serving that function. So, you know, there's...
I've grabbed the microphone. one of the issues the International Energy Agency spent some time with is precisely where does one store the home? Just to try and explain for everyone here that International Electrotechnology Commission or the International Standards Organizations, and there's a range of other bodies, but governments then are compromised because, as my colleague from Canada said, when you're a government official, you write a regulation. You publish it as Canadian Energy Efficiency Regulation applying to CFLs. And then the Australians do the same. New Zealand, a silly country across the sea from us who thinks they're independent. And you were speaking, Mr. Chair, about potentially having different regional standards. And then suddenly we arrive where we said we didn't want to be, which was 32 different standards that we counted, and then we just gave up for compact fluorescent lamps, 95% of which are built in China in 300 or 400 locations, pretty much everybody working off the same specifications. You know, it's a crazy outcome. And through you, Mr. Chair, how long have we been talking about this solid-state lighting project? And it was launched when, John? We actually got approval after...
Yeah, I mean, really, it is next week.
Yeah, but we started talking about it 2 years ago, and we're starting in 2 years' time. So I think Mr. Baker was talking about, couldn't we get IPEC to click its fingers? We probably passed a resolution yesterday at their... but it's a very complex issue. This is one of the hardest products to test because it's all lifetime. 80,000 hours takes a long time to test the product. You get a fridge, you can test it in a week. Some of these other things, you can test it in a couple of hours. You know the result. Many of the for these sorts of products, they might only cost a dollar or two, but the test can take forever. And when you've got so many manufacturers and so many different ones, and we're not testing three products. In Australia, we test 10. I think the IEC is now 20. Products.
20 samples.
So, again, if you're putting them in those big round glass ball things to measure light output, you know, there's not that many of them around the world. It's really hard work.
Yeah, I jump in the middle
of it. Mr. Chair, how about we give it to somebody who hasn't asked the question yet? No, it's the same old face.
Take it away from him.
We have good questions. Is this not actually a case for changing the way in which we look at compliance? And we keep talking about, you know, difficulty of testing light bulbs because you have to test them for a long time to really get the answer right. Is this not a case for saying, well, yes, that's fair enough. You cannot put something onto the market until you have gone through a one-year test program on it and proved that it performs as well as it you claim it to perform? Because what would that do? That would slow down innovation or rate of input of products by 1 year. But so what? Does that really make a difference? You know,
but
in
if
this
you look,
case?
If you look at the claims for lifetime for LEDs, that might be 10 years. No, it might be more than that. So, one of the things that we've been talking about is: do you, instead of saying you have to declare a lifetime or you have to test for a lifetime, what about getting manufacturers to guarantee their product? You know, money back guarantee. So then you take that away. I don't know. I don't know how we solve this problem, but that's one of the ideas.
Right, I mean, and that's only one aspect, right? The other one is you have lumen depreciation, so it might last for 80,000 hours, but it might put out 10% light after, you know, a year. You still have the same problem.
At the back.
We've only got, I'm told, 15,000 solid-state lighting manufacturers in China.
Yeah.
15,000.
Right.
It's quite an interesting communication to try and get to all 15,000.
And I'm going to make a side comment, Shane, which is the joke between Mal and I, is that it used to be there's a bunch of crappy manufacturers that make crappy CFLs in China. Well, now they're all making crappy CFLs. Now they're making crappy LEDs. So all of a sudden, our CFL quality has improved, and we haven't done anything.
I was just going to say, where you have a pre-registration, Chris Smith, the National Measurement Office, UK Enforcement, where you have a pre-registration system where a company needs to spend a year checking their product to ensure it's compliant, you'll find the good guys will do that and the bad guys will lie. That's why it's not an appropriate method.
Right, can we move on to different subjects? Is there any different questions? Alternatively, have the speakers got any questions they'd like to pose to the audience?
I think I want to go back and talk about the challenges and about capacity building, because it's not the only problem. It's not just in Asia. I think Africa, you'll be looking at the same problem in terms of testing capacity and ability for compliance. So. Yes, it's an issue that I want to throw out there for discussion, because it's sort of like a domino effect. You have to get one right, but it's not standards is it's just the beginning. Right.
So that's a good question. Is how do we build capacity? And indeed, from Mel's point about the light manufacturers in Australia, and indeed some of the experience from NMO in the UK, NAU's testing in the UK, I think some of the capacity on testing your own product is perhaps it's not just the developing countries that need to worry about it. So over at the floor, how can we actually increase capacity? Yeah, Chris?
As an manager of a test laboratory, I can tell you a commercial test laboratory, I can tell you quite simply that I never took my test laboratory into any market where there wasn't any money. So absolutely there has to be money to be made by the test laboratories. Otherwise, it's not commercially interesting to them. They're not going to invest in the equipment, staffing, and so on.
The easiest path to that is mandatory third-party testing. Mm-hmm. Then they have a business case. They can
invest. I'm told that the reason the 10% tolerance exists on the European MEPs for lighting is because of the variability in test quality of test labs across the 27 countries. That's the answer I'm being given. So that's because so they're trying to say that any test lab in those 27 countries can be part of the program, and that's the excuse that's being given for such a broad tolerance.
I see.
I don't know whether it's real or not.
But is there anyone else who wants, as he's just spoken, is there anyone else who wants to come in first before we hand it back to Chris? Okay, it's over to you.
If you look at the existing test labelling legislation in Europe, which basically dates back to the mid-90s, you'll find by a huge coincidence the figure of 10%, well, in fact, the initial figure, the first sample, 15% tolerance, and the subsequent three that followed, 10%, by a huge coincidence, that figure turns up on washing machines, washer dryers, tumble dryers, refrigerators, lighting. I know from my test lab background that the errors and uncertainties vary hugely between those different products, yet the tolerance is identical. And having sat on the standards committee, the test standards committee that actually kind of wrote those standards for Europe, I know that actually those figures were never discussed. They were simply put in by the Secretariat. And in some ways, to a certain extent, those figures have been adopted by the European Commission under the most recent sort of EU, if you will, lawmaking, without being tested or established on research results at all. They've just been kind of carried across. So they have no scientific validity whatsoever.
So we've got any more contributions on how we can increase capacity? Any thoughts on that?
There's actually the other, I guess, public service announcement I want to push is that the what 4E is doing in terms of, and also class in terms of serving as a sort of repository for knowledge and sharing. I think it's really important to make sure that outreach is being done, because actually, you know, I see the lady from Uganda here, and a couple months ago I got an email from Ghana that Ghana has just passed its first energy regulation, which is great. But then the email says, well, we've just passed the energy regulation for CFLs. Can you help us on how to test? And it's just, you know, and you have to start at the basic level. We have to go through the regulation, figure out what it is that they need to test for, and then sort of basically it's ground zero. They have no laboratory. They don't know what equipment they need. They don't know how much cost they need to set aside. I mean, those are the issues that not a lot of you guys have to deal with, but it's the reality out there for some places that we deal with in Asia and Africa.
Actually, as you mentioned that, I've been seated here like really trying to digest all your discussions, and I'm worried. Why am I worried is that we are also trying to develop a labeling and standards program, and we are looking at the testing facility, development of a testing facility. But from all your presentations, it doesn't seem to like show to me that there is any uniformity or a particular standard that is recommended to be adopted. So for us who are really behind in this, I've been wondering and baffling with it myself that, okay, how are we going to do this if the countries that our program has been based on certain countries, mostly countries that are already carrying out this program, but even some of the countries that are within this room are not are showing like big challenges on their testing facilities. So that leaves us in really a dilemma.
That question to everyone is like, how do we address that?
Something that we're doing, Australia can't afford to have test facilities for everything that's regulated. So we're using test facilities in other countries. And if you were to go to the National Lighting Test Centre in Beijing, you'd see products on test for Energy Star, for us in Australia, for Cuba, for all sorts of places. So you don't actually necessarily have to have your own testing capacity. You have to be able to find it somewhere else.
Can I just add something to that now?
Yep.
We intend to develop actually a regional testing facility, but for us within that region, we are mainly importers, and a product would pass in China or India, and it does not pass in Australia, which is also one of the countries we import from. So where is the leveling field here? Or the UK has passed this product, but a product from China does not pass. So what should be the leveling field? What should we adopt?
Right. Well, I'm told that that my minister, Lord Henley, has arrived. So I thought that was an opportune moment to wind up, let people from the other session join us, and we can then make ready for hear what the minister's got to say. But firstly, I'd like to appreciate if you show your thanks to our two speakers.